Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi everybody and welcome back to our channel. Now I know you're here because you're like, wait a minute, Sean, you big silly liar person. I know that's a truth and I'm here to go. Don't ever question me. Don't ever
question me.
You can check out our first list at the link below, but in the meantime, welcome to Trek Culture. I'm Sean Ferrick and here are 10 more notorious Star Trek urban legends. Number 10. Star Trek featured the first interracial kiss on television. A lot has been said about the episode Plato's Stepchildren from the third series of the original series, which of course featured the infamous kiss between James T. Kirk and Lieutenant Uhura. There's been a lot said about whether the kiss actually happened or not, with Nichelle Nichols saying, "It absolutely did, fight me." It may not have actually been the first interracial kiss on television. Now, there's a few contenders for this one. One includes a kiss between Sammy Davis Jr. and Nancy Sinatra. Now, that appeared on TV, but was actually a peck on the cheek, so there is a bit of argument as to whether that counts or not. Then you've got the effective mother and father of Star Trek, Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz, who of course formed and owned the studio Desilu Studios, which gave Star Trek its boost. Desi Arnaz was in fact a Hispanic male, so the fact that they would, you know, kiss and embrace on TV would predate the kiss between Kirk and Uhura. However, he has also been described as a white male with Cuban ancestry, which has led to people kind of debating whether or not that counts as well. Frankly, there is one that outstrips them all. In 1959, actor Lloyd Bridges, who funnily enough was considered for the role of Kirk, shared a kiss with Nobu McCarthy on screen. Now that was a full 10 years before Plato's Stepchildren aired, so much as we love Star Trek getting all the credit that it can, it doesn't get the credit for this one. Number 9. James Doohan created the Klingon language. Star Trek the Motion Picture features the redesigned Klingons for a cinematic age. We have Mark Leonard appearing as the Klingon captain of the new Katinga class battlecruiser, which is just cool, still my favourite. I do like a bird of prey though. A lot has been said about James Doohan basically mimicking some of the sounds that Mark Leonard made and expanding it into a language, and that is partly true, but only partly. It was a collaborative effort. James Doohan, along with producer John Povell and UCLA dialectician Hartmut Scarf, all worked together to create the languages for the film. Scarf, he designed the Vulcan language, but he also started designing the Klingon language as well. However, Paramount weren't sold on what he delivered for the Klingon language. Scarf was of Germanic descent, but he was really an expert on the Indian subcontinent of languages and dialects, which meant he wasn't able to capture what they were really looking for with the Klingon side of things. Although his Vulcan language, perfect. They loved that. Together with some of the groundwork that Scarf put into the Klingon language, with John Povell and James Doohan, they together originated the language. Now, of course, linguist Mark Ockrent, he expanded it to create the full Klingon dictionary, which is actually cool, and I will defend that to the ground. Number 8. NBC didn't want a woman on the bridge. The very first pilot of Star Trek, The Cage, features Geoffrey Hunter, Majel Barrett and Leonard Nimoy as Captain Pike, Number 1 and Mr. Spock, respectively. As we know, that pilot didn't sell, but Star Trek was given a lifeline when they were told to go and reshoot the pilot. Now, between The Cage and Where No Man Has Gone Before, there are some notable differences. The character of Spock goes through some big changes. He goes from a more feeling alien to the Vulcan that we're a little bit more used to today. We also notice that he's been bumped up in rank to the first officer, and Majel Barrett's Number 1 is nowhere to be seen. The common myth is that NBC said, "We do not want a woman on the bridge, especially in a position of power like that." That's not actually true. The problem, I'm sorry to say, was Majel Barrett. NBC didn't believe that she had the acting chops to carry the role of first officer on the ship. Therefore, when they were giving their edicts of what needed to be changed, such as Spock's satanic appearance and Majel Barrett in general, Gene Roddenberry knew he was going to dig his heels in and fight for Spock, but he was happy enough to move Majel Barrett into a much more supporting role, which is where Christine Chapel came from. Number 7. Roddenberry's homophobia kept gays out of the final frontier. Gene Roddenberry himself has gone on record and said that as a younger man, he was homophobic. He used homophobic slurs. He knew exactly what he was saying when he said it. And at the time, he didn't see much of an issue with it. However, as he grew older, he began to mellow and he began to understand different walks of life, different orientations, different ways of being, which of course informed an awful lot of what was written for Star Trek. Then it is notable that it was only after Gene Roddenberry died that gays in general began turning up in Star Trek. And of course, that happened over a very long period of time, with episodes like The Host, The Outcast being tentative steps, and then of course Rejoined being a good step forward, but then almost nothing until Star Trek Discovery. It wasn't Roddenberry that was keeping them out of the final frontier. He had said as early as the 80s that he did plan to have gay people serving in his new spin-off series, which was the then upcoming Star Trek The Next Generation. Now, the problem was his lawyer, Leonard Mazlish. He is the one directly responsible for blocking David Gerrold's script, Blood and Fire. David Gerrold was, of course, the author who wrote the original series episode, The Trouble with Tribbles. Blood and Fire has gone on to be made as part of the extended universe of Star Trek as a fan production, but the fact is, it was made as an allegory for the ongoing AIDS epidemic of the 80s and the early 90s, and Mazlish completely shut it down. He did so in a very direct, very offensive manner. There was no hiding the fact that Mazlish didn't want any of that gay stuff in Star Trek. Since then, there has been many accusations pointed at many different people at the top of that era of Star Trek about why gay people weren't as a part of the final frontier until much later on. But for the purposes of this entry alone, this is leveled directly at Leonard Mazlish, his blocking of the script of Blood and Fire, and the delay for the next almost 20 years in gays getting a chance to serve aboard a starship.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Number 6. Ricardo Montalban wore a fake chest. Now, this is one of the classic urban legends of Star Trek, that Ricardo Montalban couldn't possibly have had that chest in Wrath of Khan. Oh, no, there's no way. There was silicone going on. Something like 152 seasons of RuPaul's Drag Race has taught me everything about breastplates and chest plates and all of that. Easy, silicone. No, total nonsense. The man, much like myself, just hopped down and just did press-ups every single day while he was getting ready for the film. The man was a legend. He, of course, had been working on Fantasy Island for years before Star Trek The Wrath of Khan came along. So he said in interviews that he had to struggle to get back into character. It had been so long since he had played Khan in that episode, Space Seed. However, in rewatching the episode, reading the script, and being so angry at the sheer amount of working out he had to do, yeah, I understand his wrath in that one. But you can debunk that right now. If you were to prick that chest, it would bleed. Number 5. Patrick Stewart was originally going to wear a wig. There is a modicum of truth to this one, because when Patrick Stewart was introduced to Gene Roddenberry originally to read for the role of Captain Picard, Roddenberry, he was a bit shocked, because this Shakespearean British actor was not what he had imagined to play his French captain of the Enterprise. Thankfully, obviously, Patrick Stewart won him around by simply being Patrick Stewart. But another issue that Roddenberry had was he, at the time, couldn't imagine his lead, his captain, as being bald. As part of his work for the Royal Shakespeare Company, Patrick Stewart had already commissioned a wig for various roles on stage, and so he got that FedExed out to LA, and he turned up wearing the wig one day. They agreed that, no, this man is good enough, we don't need the wig, let's basically take a run with this. Gene Roddenberry signed off on it, so there was never, after seeing the wig, there was never a plan to have Picard with hair. Before seeing the wig, yes, maybe. Thankfully, obviously, Patrick Stewart won the hearts and minds of everyone, including Roddenberry himself, because when asked by an interviewer along the way whether by the 24th century humanity wouldn't have cured baldness, Roddenberry quipped back, by the 24th century, humanity wouldn't care. Number 4. Dr. Saren hated Kirk, Trek, and everything in between. Again, this is one that has elements of truth, which is what has led to this story. When Malcolm McDowell was originally cast in Star Trek Generations, it did take 4 goes to get the man to sign on. He has been very open about the fact that it was a paycheck film. You can't blame the man for that. You would love every single person who's ever filmed for Star Trek to love the franchise. But the truth is, that's simply not the case. He did make a very interesting statement. He said that at the end of the day, it didn't really matter whether he loved the script or not. He said that once the Trek treadmill started going, Trekkies were going to jump on regardless of the quality of the film or, you know, the perceived quality of the script. His statement has been somewhat tested from J.J. Abrams' reboot of the franchise in 2009, to the arrival of Star Trek Discovery, to Star Trek Picard and even Lower Decks. And there has been many vocal oppositions to, people call it New Trek, Kurtzman era Star Trek, whatever you want to call it. There has been a lot of Trekkies who are very not on board with this era of Star Trek, and to each their own. McDowell himself, he never hated Star Trek. He just commented really on the fact of it wasn't massively important what the actors thought at the end of the day. Which, in a way, is good, because he did confess to his nephew, Alexander Siddig, that he did think the script for Generations was shit. Number 3. Geordi was going to be revealed as a half-alien. By the time Star Trek The Next Generation got to the 7th season, there was a feeling behind the scenes that the show was running out of steam.
When they got to the episode Interface, Ronald D. Moore felt that by introducing Geordi's mother, they were really scraping the bottom of the barrel.
Jerry Taylor also commented on the fact that there had been plans originally to reveal that the reveal of Geordi's family was going to show that he was not actually fully human, that he was only half human. In a way, they touched on this in the 4th season episode, Identity Crisis, the incredibly creepy episode where Geordi starts mutating into an alien life form after coming into contact with them years before. In the end, they elected not to go this route because it was a bit of a late-in-the-day reveal, they felt. However, they did recycle some of the elements of this story into the Star Trek Voyager episode, Favorite Son, where Harry Kim is revealed to be half-alien and from the Delta Quadrant. And of course, I can see no problem with that story whatsoever. Trilogy of Terror. Number 2. Roddenberry was with Star Trek the whole time. Unfortunately, this one just ain't true. And I don't even mean when he was bumped to executive consultant on the films. When Star Trek was coming up to the end of its 2nd season, they were facing cancellation, and thankfully, a letter-writing campaign organised by superfan Joe Trimble managed to save the show and bring it back. But, that all-important but, Roddenberry said that he would only come back as long as the show got the budget it deserved and a time slot it deserved. He was ignored completely. Star Trek was given the death slot of Friday nights at 10, and that really was the beginning of the end for the show. However, Roddenberry took this as a bit of a personal insult, which, in a way, it was. He left the show and was not involved in the 3rd season of Star Trek other than to contribute to a few things here or there, but he was not by any means showrunner. No, Fred Freiberger was showrunner for the 3rd season, which is, unfortunately, history has shown us, a dubious honour. Season 3 is rough. Unfortunately, it was Fred Freiberger who oversaw Star Trek as it went into its decline and eventual cancellation, not Roddenberry. Now, Roddenberry would not come back on as an official showrunner until The Next Generation. And even then, unfortunately, but this is more due to health, he was only involved for the first couple of years. Number 1. There was only one Gene. That one, completely false. Gene L. Coon is a name that every Trekkie should know as much as they know Gene Roddenberry. Gene L. Coon was brought on as basically a script doctor as the show went on, but he also was a writer himself, and under his tenure, some vaguely important elements were added to Star Trek. The United Federation of Planets, Khan-Noonien Sing, Starfleet Command, the Prime Directive. William Shatner attributes all of these to Coon in his novel Star Trek Memories. Now, Coon would eventually leave after the 2nd season, basically citing exhaustion as the reason, but he did contribute to a couple of scripts in the 3rd season under a pseudonym of Lee Cronin as well. But he was, if not as important as Gene Roddenberry in getting Star Trek going, he was certainly as important when it came to shaping Star Trek as we know it today. Some of the most important tenets of the franchise were created under his watch and with his pen. Gene L. Coon, guys, remember that name.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered.
Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
it. Coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.